We're talking with Rick Steinberger, also Jerry Steinberger from Armstrong, here for our KILR Memorial Week Veterans Program. First of all, we're going to start with Jerry. Would you mind telling us what branch of the military and where you served?
I enlisted in the Army National Guard in January of 1970. In April of 1970, April 29th to be exact, I went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky for basic training. And I was there during the duration of the basic training. And then from there, I went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma for advanced training. They call it AIT. And I was there and I graduated AIT November 4th of 1970. And I come back to, at that time, I lived in Blue Earth, Minnesota. And I served my remainder of my 6 years with the 194th Field Artillery, Charlie Batty, which is here in Estherville. At the end of my 6 years, I re-enlisted for two more. I went to Humboldt, Iowa, for the 194th. That was FDC, which is Fire Direction Center, and I worked Fire Direction, which is responsible for the aiming and shooting of the guns and targets. And at the end of the 2 years, I got out in the military, and that's basically my story.
What was it that prompted you to join the military?
Well, I think everybody should go in the military. I really do. I think that, at least in this country, it's an honor and a privilege and a duty for somebody to do that. Not everybody can serve, but everybody should try to serve. If they can't serve in the military, there's other capacities, Peace Corps, things like that. I want to give back to the country what the country gave to me. And at that time, Vietnam was going, and I was in college. I was married a very short time before I left, and we had a baby on the way, so I thought the National Guard would be my best route to go. So once I was in there, I enjoyed it, and that's why I re-enlisted for two more years and come out as an E6 or Staff Sergeant. I'm glad I went. I'd do it again in a heartbeat if I wasn't so old.
Yeah. Very good. Do you still keep in touch with some buddies?
You know, when I graduated basic back then, we all exchanged addresses, and a lot of my friends were from California, New Jersey, all over the United States, the ones that I went basic and AIT with. And we got close. You bond with them. You're with them all day. And you start out, you write letters, and back then we didn't have internet. We didn't have text messages or cell phones, or just snail mail. But we just gradually drifted apart.
Do you tell stories to your children and grandchildren?
Well, not as much as these two. Mine's kind of lackluster compared to what these two went through. He was in Desert Storm, and he was in Normandy, so I guess I let them tell the stories. They got better stories than they got. Yeah. So, well, they ask, and I tell them. And I'm involved in the Legion, and I'm in the process of joining VFW as an associate member. I wasn't in a foreign war, so I couldn't be a member, but I can see. Be an associate through Rick and through Dad. So that's what I'm going to do there. So that's how I'm going to continue to serve, I guess.
Well, and thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
That shows your dedication and your true American
thank you.
Spirit. Now, if we could speak with Rick here, you being the youngest of these three, when did you first enlist into the service?
So I received an ROTC scholarship when I graduated high school at Iowa State. So I went to Iowa State and was in the ROTC program and serving in the reserves, going weekend a month during college.
Okay.
And then was called to active duty in support of Desert Storm at the middle of my first year. So I went to basic training right out of high school and missed my first semester of college. Went to Iowa State for almost two semesters and then got activated.
That quickly?
Yeah. So not what the recruiter told me was going to happen, but I was in the reserve unit in Fort Dodge, and when we got activated, it turns out that we had too many people overstrength. So what happened is me and a few of my buddies that were the new guys kind of got put on a a list for someone else who needed someone with our expertise.
I see.
So I ended up shipping overseas with a 300th MP company out of Inkster, Michigan. And we shipped in December of 90 to Fort McCoy, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And did our desert training in January in Wisconsin.
As best as you can.
But it was appropriate training because the outdoors were rough. You know, that's kind of what the desert was like too. So, but we trained there until January and flew to Saudi Arabia and spent about a week climatizing and orienting to the time change in Dharan, and then we went to where our camp was, which is about 40 miles south of the Iraq-Saudi Arabia border. So what we did is we were just in the middle of nowhere. We were on a half a mile maybe from a hard surface road, and the desert at that place was more of a hard-packed sand. It wasn't the dunes like you see in Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
It was really hard cement almost, you know. So.
Wow.
We set up camp, and we ended up building a small city. We had our own, by the end of the war, we had our own little store and machine shop, or a woodworking shop, and a kitchen and dining hall, all
really?
Tents, of course, yeah.
Wow.
And then we had 18 enclosures for, we were a prisoner camp, is what we were.
I see.
So we had 18 enclosures, is what they're called, areas for prisoners. We ended up having about 35,000 prisoners come through our facility during the war.
Really? And what's this time frame?
They started as soon as we started dropping bombs on January 17th, and then the ground war started in February, I think, 15th, is that what, 12th maybe? But as soon as the bombs started dropping, they, if you remember, they started giving up in hordes. Mm-hmm. And they came to us on foot, in Chinooks, in trailers, in buses, you know, just never stopped.
Unreal.
And again, at that time, most of the military that Iraq had was kind of conscripted civilians, you know. They were,
okay.
We treated, fed them and clothed them better than they had been on the lines. They were grabbed up. They were in street clothes.
Really?
Many of them were. Now, there was another faction of the prisoners that were Republican Guard, hardened military, what you would expect.
I see.
And we kind of, they had their own place in the camp, and but it was pretty busy there for a while.
Well, yeah, I can imagine.
And according to the Geneva Convention and the rules, we have to provide them with certain things, food, shelter.
Yes.
So they were actually living a little better than we were, because we had to do our work to get them ready. So they had a hot meal. I won't get into all that, but they had a little bit better. And eventually we did get hot meals. Like I said, we had a kitchen set up at some point down the way. And we had we'll call it sanitation provisions that helped better than digging holes in the desert,
yes.
You know. But no, and then we shipped everybody home. You know, if you remember, the ground war only lasted a few days.
Mm-hmm. It was quite short.
100 hours. And once things were stabilized, we started shipping them back to home, back to their Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we shipped back home in kind of the May, June time frame.
Okay.
And then I stayed on active duty in Fort McCoy and rejoined my original unit from Fort Dodge.
Okay.
When they came back, they came back a little bit after I did, so I stuck around there and then joined up with them, and then we processed soldiers coming home at Fort McCoy. So
okay.
I stayed there for the summer and then finished my 6 years in the reserves and ended up leaving the ROTC program. You know, I felt like I'd had my fill of active duty, you know, and like Dad said, it was something I thought I should do. That's the way these guys brought me up to join, and I was going to do the ROTC thing, which was 4 years of active duty after college. But then after this, I think that's enough, and I wanted to start my career. So I ended up dropping out of the ROTC program.
I see.
And just doing the reserves thing, which was rewarding in itself.
Yes. You know,
but
was that basically when you traveled overseas? Was that your first time out of the country?
Probably my first time on an airplane. I mean, I still remember we flew out of Volk Field in Wisconsin, which is it's one of the longest runways around, and they use it for military planes. But at that time, we were sending, maybe had 500,000 troops we were sending over there. So a lot of us, including myself, went over on a commercial. I flew over on an L-1011.
I see.
But I remember standing there, and we were shipping out, and the first group from our company went over there, and they flew on a 141, a C-141, which is a military jet.
Okay.
So they're more tactical, and they have a very fast takeoff.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And I remember just putting me on my heels, standing there watching them guys take off, and it was a kind of foggy day, and all my buddies got on this plane right off the tarmac, and I'm expecting it to go down and launch, and within a few seconds, they were gone from sight in the fog.
Amazing.
And it just was a stark kind of, oh my,
yeah,
like, this is really happening.
Like,
they're gone. I can't even see them anymore. And so, yeah, we flew out of Volk Field. And, yeah, that was my first time overseas. We flew to Zaragoza, Spain. There's an army base there, and stayed there and changed planes, and then flew, like I say, to Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, which was where everybody coming into country went to acclimatize
and get acclimated.
Ship up, to get acclimated and time, adjusted for the time change. And yep. And if you remember, at that time, that's when they had the Scud missiles.
Mm, yes.
So that was a prime kind of target for those. Which they weren't very accurate, luckily, so they didn't hit much. And we had the Patriot defense system, which would kind of knock them out of the sky.
Gotcha.
But there were several times, you know, they were afraid of them with a sending nerve agent in those Scuds. So we spent a lot of times in gas masks and, you know.
Because
you just...
Yeah, protect yourself.
The missiles would come, and you could see them sometimes, and you could see the Patriots, you know, knock them out. If they got...
Yes,
they would rarely get close enough to... But certainly once we got out into our station, which was north, you could see them flying over, and it was quite a spectacle.
Yeah. Wow. One more way that you're putting your life on the line is...
Yeah, I mean, it was...
The dangers of missiles.
Looking back, you know, it was such a success, you know, that it's easy to forget. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of scary, you know, for a young kid from Iowa.
Right.
With, you know, missiles. I mean, we don't know. All we knew was they had a million-man army. We didn't know they were going to... So, I mean, for a while, it was pretty tense, I guess. But when you're 18, you're... Bulletproof, right?
Yeah, indispensable.
Yeah.
Right. How was your contact relationship with the prisoners? I mean, were you allowed to speak with them? Obviously.
Yeah,
Because you provided, you know, comforts for them in a way. And so.
And yeah, they were very respectful. Like I say, most of them were civilians, conscripted. So they were happy almost to be there because we were getting fed and they were getting, you know, baths and shelter and. It still hangs in my office today. I traded a guy's carton of cigarettes and gave him a picture of some of my family members, and he was an artist. And he sat in his tent, and a couple days later, he had just wonderful portraits he had sketched for me. And you know, just
members,
yeah. So and I talked to him, and I got only one of the pictures made it back. I mailed some stuff home at the end of the war. Someone tried to ship some bullets home and burnt the whole mail truck up, including all my stuff. So I lost those pictures ultimately. But I there was one that was a small one, and I put it in a tablet, and I still got that one.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was, they were just folks.
Any last thoughts, Rick?
You know, if anybody born after 1970, you know, if you get a chance to sit down with a World War II vet, you know, take it. There's so much... It's just so different. Them guys have been through so much in their life, and I've got 17, 18-year-old kids, and to think about them hitchhiking across the country to come home for what he thought was a parent's funeral is absurd. I can't even comprehend it. But those guys were just a different breed of cat.
Thank you to Rick Steinberger and Jerry Steinberger. Thank you for sharing your stories with us today.